Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, my brothers and sisters. Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of T&J Radio. I'm in the building with my main man, Jay Wells. How you doing, man?
I'm excellent, bro. Good afternoon, kings and queens. I hope everyone's having a great week.
Absolutely. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We had another show on deck for today, but obviously we just want to say peace to our brother Walter Scott, who was gunned down recently. And due to that, we felt like we needed to shift gears and really talk about that for today's show. And as always, you know, T&J Radio, solution-based radio. So we'll talk about police brutality today. We'll talk about how we as a people can curb that, and not only police brutality, but brutality versus black folks from other ethnic groups in general, spearheaded by white males, as we can see in terms of what's been going on recently. But we definitely will get all over that today, because at this point in time, it's just an epidemic and it's out of control. And it's funny, we've been doing this show for a few months now, and every time, it's been massive bodies since we've been doing the show. That's the point. Every time we'll have a topic scheduled, and then it's like, oh, we have to talk about something else because another brother has been killed senselessly by law enforcement or something similar, or you know, along those lines. So when I heard this news and when I saw the video, because I usually wouldn't watch something like the video of what happened to our brother Walter Scott, but sometimes you just have to, for me, I had to see it, but usually I wouldn't watch it. But when I saw the video, it was just completely mind-boggling. It tore me apart internally. It hurt my soul, man, to be quite honest, and I haven't really been able to deal with it effectively since I saw it, because if you're a black man and you can really relate to that plight, or a black person in general, you know that that can be you. You know at any given moment your life is being viewed as you're not a human being, and for running away you can be shot when you don't have any arms on you, when you're defenseless. And so it's at a point where it almost feels like it's this us versus them mentality. And I'm feeling like, should we feel the same way as black folks, as black men, that it is us versus them, meaning us versus the cops, not in a military type of way, but in a mental way. I already felt like that, but it's obvious what the situation is. And so we get in our bag tonight. Like, I mean, there's no need to really beat around the bush on this. Wells, when you saw that, man, when you really took this in and took it for what it was, and compounded with the past incidents that have gone on recently, I mean, where are you mentally, and how did that affect you?
First things first, man, it's impossible to avoid the us versus them mentality. When you continuously see these things, you continuously see white privilege being rubbed in your face. And honestly, you have to be asleep to not feel something when you see these things. It's like you really have to go out of your way to not pay attention. It's like it's impossible. I don't care who you are, what you do. White privilege is being rubbed in your face constantly right now. And something that was retweeted, it came across my timeline this morning. It was some stats from mappingpoliceviolence.org. And, like, we talked about this before on the show. And, honestly, a lot of the things we're going to discuss over today's show we've talked about before. That's what's really kind of making this frustrating. It's like, but according to the stats, currently 36 black people were killed by police Excuse me. 36 black people are being killed by police every 21 hours. So every 21 hours, 36 brothers are being killed by police. And that's a 71% increase just over the course of 1 month. And black men in America are on average four times more likely to be killed by a police officer. And of those black people killed by police officers, 47% of them were unarmed. So just taking a look into that statistic, there's no way to hide the fact that you have a target on your back. There's no way to avoid that. And it's like when you look at those situations, you look at those stats, you're just like, Jesus, man, how can I defend myself? How can I protect myself? And these aren't situations that we can avoid. From what it sounds from what I've gotten from the stories, Walter Scott was stopped for like a broken taillight or something like that. So, and again, we don't know how we ended up out of the car and all that stuff. But these are things that we can't avoid. I mean, people have broken taillights. You know what I'm saying? It's like a lot of things can happen. So there's no way to avoid it. And I'm not saying directly go in a straight confrontation mode with police. I wouldn't say that. I'm definitely not saying go to the mattresses on cops. We don't want to do that because that won't end well for anyone. But we need to be ready to record. Like, I want to find out who recorded that video. I want to start a fund for him, for the person that recorded the video. That honestly, that kid's a hero, whoever that was. And I wish it didn't have to be this way, but we have to be prepared to record. It's like when they pull you over, they ask for license and registration. Let them know I am grabbing my phone too, because I want to record our conversation. I want to video record this interaction. It's like that's the point where we are now. It's like you have to be ready to record the entire situation. And it might piss a couple of police officers off. That might get you a ticket when you maybe would have gotten a warning. But, hey, better safe than sorry. So we have to get to the point where we are immediately in defense mode when the police are around. And you don't want to live that way, but that's what it is. And until we are in a situation where we can – until we as a group – create an environment where we can feel confident in the competence of police, we have to live this way.
Yeah, man, I agree. And, you know, it's one of those things where the disparity is so messed up because a brother can be driving with a taillight out and a European can be driving with a taillight out, and it's two totally different ways that you're viewed. That cop automatically assumes that, you know, if you're a brother and you get pulled over with that taillight out, you got some work on you, or you riding dirty or whatever, right? But then if a European is caught and pulled over, it's a totally different story. Like, I have so many, you know what I'm saying, white friends that have been like, yo, I got pulled over with a taillight and gave a cop some crazy story, and then I just rolled off into the sunset. And then our brothers, you know, and our sisters get pulled over with a taillight, and you shook to death. You don't know if you're going to get bodied. You don't know if you're going to just get a ticket and get harassed. You really don't know what the treatment from that cop is going to be for a basic, silly infraction that a lot of the times you don't even know about if you don't have a new car. If you're riding in an older car, your car isn't going to tell you, hey, bruh, your tail light is out. You know what I'm saying? Whereas if you're riding something newer, it probably will. And so that's like the sad part about it. You never know. So I'm feeling like I don't know the details of the story, but he probably, in the back of his mind, just like the brother a few weeks ago in Virginia that got into it with the cops at the liquor store, at the ABC store, you know, you go into a situation just thinking it's all good, and before you know it, they have a perception of you formed, and you have in the back of your mind recent events of what they might do to you, and now it's this toxic environment. So you take off running, and he already has this bias built up in his mind about what you might do, and next thing you know, he start popping a pistol at you. And so it's this really toxic environment of stereotypes and distrust, and it's all wrapped up into a really, you know what I'm saying, dangerous mix of of thoughts that unfortunately have been costing a lot of black folks their lives, and that's really unfortunate. But the thing is, Wells, and we kind of just started hitting at this, how do you defend yourself in this instance? I mean, like, that's the main thing that, and we kind of talked about this earlier before the show. How do you defend yourself? I mean, what do you do? Because if you act right, so to speak, you don't know what they might do. If you act nervous, you might, you know, tip them off or make them come at you sideways. What do you do when confronted by an angry cop or, you know, just some, let's keep it funky, white person exercising their white privilege, feeling like they can tell you what to do in a public space and you don't have the right to respond?
And me personally, this could be to my detriment at certain points, but I'm sorry, man, I'm a man first. And there's only so much I can let slide, you know what I mean? It's like certain things that I can handle and certain things I can't handle. I'm not going to let this man disrespect me, badge or not. But at the same time, we're going to have it clear that if I've done something illegal, you can give me my ticket, you can arrest me for that, whatever it may be, but you're not just going to put your hands on me and all that kind of stuff. And the thing is, I really believe with a lot of these cops, they target people that they feel like they can get over on. It's like, not saying, and again, I don't know every situation, but it's like they immediately judge us by what they think we are. And as they get to see, as situations develop, their action has changed. It's like as soon as police officers see a camera or something, they get immediately upset, they get frustrated, they get frazzled, they lose that tough guy act immediately. And that's what's really unfortunate. It's like you can just go on YouTube and just do a search for these things. You'll find a host of videos where cops just kind of get frustrated when someone pulls out a camera on them. Or they'll try to knock the camera out of your hand and all of these different things. They get immediately frustrated. They don't know what to do. Because the thing is, they've generated this fake bravado that because I got a badge, I'm tough. And most cops, seriously, 5'7", 200 pounds, feeling like they swole. You know, they got on a couple of little body vests, they feel big. But no, it's like they really kind of lose their minds. And it's up to us to kind of hold them accountable. That's why the importance of recording them, putting them on front, putting them in, making them the star of the situation. And that's what's going to really kind of help change that format. And also, it's going to take a lot of work within our communities ourselves to do that. And that's the only way we can defend ourselves, because until we're in the point where we're the decision maker, and that's going to take a lot of work within our communities.
Yeah, it's really one of those situations where you do feel like it's kind of almost a helpless situation, you know, because you think that, I mean, I think it is almost to the point to where it's a helpless situation, you feel like, because what can you do? You don't have the power to change it, because you don't have the people in place to make change. And I always, you know, I was just having a conversation the other day where, you know, we were kind of talking about how do you create change in communities. And the topic always came back to, do the people in power actually care? And I know it sounds really simple and basic, but I think for me, you know, that's really what it comes down to when it comes to defending yourself. I mean, you can't really defend yourself in that instance, but in the big picture, is do the people in power really care? And I just thought that was really important, because if the people on top care, then that kind of trickles down, just like at any job. If the culture of the job is bad, it's usually because the culture up top is bad. If it's a good culture in the workplace, it's because the, you know, leadership is good. And so I think it's really difficult to gauge how you can really defend yourself, because you really have to just, you know, be on your best behavior. And I'm like you, though. I'm a man first. You won't disrespect me. if you talk greasy, I'm talking greasy back. You know what I mean? That's just it. And because I don't feel like just because you have a badge or what have you, you have the right to disrespect me. So if you come at me sideways, I'm more than likely going to talk to you just how you talk to me. And that's kind of how it is. You know, I'm not tolerating disrespect. And if I get clapped, then I get clapped. I guess that's kind of the way I view it. But, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. But you know,
I know, right?
But, I mean, but I'm saying, like, that's kind of how it is, right? You know, if a cop disrespects you, then you just give them what they give you back, and then whatever happens, happens. But so it's really interesting because I think a lot of this has to do with what we talked about a little bit, and it's media-driven, because when they ride up on us, and it's messed up because we had this same conversation several times, but it's media-driven, and they already have these preconceived notions of us as people. And I got my little handy-dandy Black Stats book, and if y'all want the Black Stats book, it's by Monique W. Harris. It's called Black Stats, African Americans by the Numbers in the 21st Century, and it's really just a book full of all type of stats that you can imagine by Black people, and, you know, about Black folks and our conditions in America. Really fascinating stuff, but something really interesting is 47% of Black people in the United States report that in their area, within a mile of their home, they are afraid to walk alone at night. And I was like, I thought that was really interesting. But then I was wondering, why is that? Is that because your neighborhood is actually dangerous? Is that media driven? Is that, because I think a lot of it is other people telling us that we're dangerous. I don't think we're as dangerous as we think we are. Now, and I know that sounds strange, but I don't think we're as dangerous as we think we are. So is this treatment driven by us in the way that we treat each other in our own communities, you know, from the violence and things of that nature, or is it something else? And that's real, because we could talk about white supremacy and we know the communities, you know, we know why our communities are the way that they are and how they were set up to be hoods and all of that. But is the violence in our own communities that we commit against ourselves the driving force towards why these people view us these ways, or is it media driven? Is it something else? What do you think, Wells?
I think it's a large combination of both. But honestly, man, it goes back to the propaganda machine creating and feeding the self-hate. Like, yeah, there are some crimes, but there's crimes everywhere. And you look at the statistics on it, you're going to find crimes everywhere, no matter where you are, no matter where you go, whether it's D.C., Detroit, Baltimore, Chicago, there's always going to be crime. There's always going to be petty crimes, but at the same time, every neighborhood isn't as bad as people make it seem. And that kind of goes back into the self-hate, and that kind of goes back into us needing to police ourselves within our community. But I want to get back to the propaganda machine that the media has created. Like, they've done such a major job of making us look like animals. Just going back to the Michael Slager situation, the conversation, you look on the internet, the conversation has turned into why was Walter running instead of why did Michael shoot? You know what I'm saying? It's like that's the kind of way the media spins these things. But they've kind of turned this, they changed the conversation. And it's really just kind of crazy to me. And it's what's really insulting is that a lot of the stuff that the media was putting out there was that that the officer was afraid for his life. And that's something that's just crazy to me. And
that
something that stumbled
sense.
Across. And that's the when did you have the opportunity to be afraid for your life? And what's crazy to me is I stumbled across this article. It was about a white teen in Pennsylvania. And she actually got into 3 hit and runs and got to the point where she was actually stumping on a cop's head. But they detained her alive. This is like back in September 2014 or something. And all I kept thinking about was, geez, man, he wasn't afraid for his life. And she was
right.
She was stumping him in the head. He wasn't in fear of his life. He didn't use a weapon.
Stumping him out.
She's stumping you out, and you didn't get shot. It's like you were comfortable. I was like, I didn't get that. And that's something that's crazy to me. But also, I do want to mention one thing, man. I was talking to my cousin about this. My cousin's a cop in Stone Mountain, Georgia. And we were kind of texting back and forth earlier, and he made a really good point, man. And you do want to take this, you do want to keep this in mind, because my whole thing is, I was talking to him, I'm like, seriously, man, as a brother, how do you feel being a cop? How do you handle being a cop with these kind of situations going on? And people always talk about that cops not snitching on other cops kind of thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
they kind of, and it's like people always want to say all cops aren't bad, but if a cop doesn't tell on a bad cop, he's a bad cop too. And
mm-hmm.
he made a really good point. He was talking about a lot of guys become police officers just because they want to get that extra self-esteem and that power, but they don't understand that they're not cut out for this position, and they don't have the mental makeup for it. And he referenced the fact that there's good teachers and there's bad teachers and things like that, and true. But the thing is, man, this is a position of authority. This isn't just a position of, this is the position of authority. And you have so many lives in your hand, we can't afford to have police officers acting emotional or in a rage. You know what I'm saying? Or just being reactionary to a moment instead of being big picture. It's like we're not in a position to allow that to happen. And that's the thing that kind of, like, you look at all these situations from Mike Brown, even to George Zimmerman acting on his fake white privilege. This dude, these are people just making split-second decisions and not worried about the outcome because they know at the worst it won't be that bad for them. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and that's what happens. And it's really one of those things just infuriating, but at the same time, it creates that situation where we need to reflect on the images that are being portrayed of us and what gives them that psychological power that they can do these things.
Yeah, and I think the funny part about it, but not funny, but funny ironic, is when it is, black cops involved. Because, I mean, I'm keeping it extra funky. I have 0% faith, confidence in the criminal justice system. I mean, I don't feel like if I ever committed a crime, which Lord willing, I never will, and I haven't to this point in my life, I don't feel like I would get a fair shake. I don't feel like I would get a fair shake. I don't feel like the system is set up for me to get a fair shake. I don't feel like the system is set up for you to get a fair shake, especially if you don't have long money. You really won't get a fair shake. So then it comes this thing where you get, and recently I've been seeing and reading a ton of stories about black men being released from prison after serving, 20, 30, 40
years
for crimes that they didn't commit. And so, I think that that's a huge piece of this, where the distrust for the criminal justice system is so strong that, I would have to say that I have zero faith. And I, in the Black Stats book, 36% of black people report having very little to no confidence in the criminal justice system, compared to 30% for whites and 21% for Latinos who feel the same. So, black folks have a high level of distrust for the system for a reason. And that's always been my thing, man. Like, when people tell you something, you should believe them. Everybody is not saying the same thing, and it's not true. If everybody tells me that Wells is a jerk, after a while, I have to believe that Wells is a jerk. And I think it's the same thing with the criminal justice system. If all of these people, black folks in particular, are saying this, at some point, our justice system has to listen and really start doing something and putting some things in place to change that. With that being said, Wells, I'll let you get first crack at it. because TNJ Radio is solution-based radio, and, you know, we do want to talk about some ways that we feel that this can be at least curbed or, you know, changed to some degree. What solution or solutions would you want to get started with to kind of rectify this situation or a similar situation?
Man, this is one of those topics, dude, that it's just extremely difficult to kind of find a solution for. And the first thing that came to my head, man, and we kind of, you and I in a private conversation, we kind of talked about this, but we have to stop going to Master to complain about the overseer. Like, that has to stop. And honestly, all we can do, organize and band together to police ourselves. And we have to start holding them accountable for their actions. And those things come through the practice of group politics, banding together within our community to start our own neighborhood watches, doing things to police ourselves. We have to talk to each other, man. We have to eliminate the guys that sell drugs or that we know do criminal activities within our community, because in most cases, these are people of the community. Most drug dealers within your community is somebody that you know, son, cousin, sister, brother. We have to try to help each other. And that goes back to eliminating the self-hate within ourselves. It's like you have to – selling drugs to your brother or selling drugs to your sister is a form of self-hate. We have to get away from these things. And those are the things that the police use to justify having a heavy presence in our community. And that's what creates the effect for or situations that can happen where a brother gets shot or an Eric Garner can get choked out, things like that. With these small little petty dumb crimes, that increases the police presence. And that's how dumb situations escalate. And it's up to us to do that, man. We have to take that next step in unifying with each other and actually bonding together. And it's like, honestly, this is a challenge that I would issue to any church, youth group, anyone. This is an opportunity for you to kind of, hey, you want to go do something? Walk around your community with your brothers, man. Speak to people. Don't necessarily go preaching to people. Just go talk to them. You know, get a pulse of the people and try to get a situation where people feel like it's safe again. We have to rebuild the black community. And with doing that, we'll be able to signify the strength in our numbers. Because when we become the eyes and ears of our own communities, there's always a real witness. They can't discredit witnesses like they did in the Mike Brown situation. Because they were so divided, the police got those people in one room, got those people in rooms alone. The story started changing. People got shifty. People got shaky. And that's how that situation turns into that's what allowed the situation to become discredited. And that's what kind of hurt the Michael Brown situation. That's how Darren Wilson was able to walk, because of weak witnesses. We have to become the eyes and ears of our community better by policing ourselves. And I think that alone is a step in the right direction. And again, with going back into group politics, the more we do that, we can empower people that in our community that can really help us find community leaders that are invested. And that's the problem. Like you mentioned before, Trav, like a lot of these people that we have in positions of power don't really care. They just want to get a check, give their boys a contract. Everybody eats. They're having a good time. But that's my solution.
Yeah, and I would echo that. You know, I'm in the same boat. I think that it starts with us. You know, we have to kind of almost say forget what, you know, what the man and what the outsiders are doing and focus on our internals. You know, we're at a point where we all recognize, we're all smart enough, we know white privilege, we know, you know, institutional racism, we understand these concepts, and what we need to do is band together in our own communities, work harder to curb the issues that cause violence and poverty in our own communities, and increase the self-love in our own communities by working together more. And I think the more we work together, the more that police see we love each other, then they won't be so quick to kill us, because we're bonded and we're working together. And I think that that's where we really want to start with this, because the more that we're together, it's harder for them to break us apart. When you have a fractured unit, then you can come in and make things happen. So with that being said, man, rest in peace, rest in power to our brother Walter Scott on everything. Peace to the family.
Yes.
TNJ Radio, you know, solution-based radio. Thanks for listening to us. We'll see you guys next week, 6:30 next Wednesday. And as you know, God is love. Peace.